This podcast contains strong language and is intended for mature audiences. It is for entertainment purposes only.
Welcome back, podcast listeners. I know it's been a while. Research shows as many as 36% of Americans are engaging in kink or BDSM, which stands for bondage, discipline, sadism, and masochism, ranging from hardcore bondage tools and games to lighter fare like using masks, light spanking, and blindfolds during sex. 75% or more of us say that we've got fetishes. Up to 20% of us may have attempted consensually non-monogamous relationships, although only about 4 to 5% identify as being in serious long-term polyamorous relationships. To be clear, these worlds are not specific to whether a person identifies as LGBTQIA. However, to some, polyamory and kink are seen as sexual orientations, totally worthy of inclusion in that long list of letters. What's really important here, though, is that it doesn't matter how you identify. We know everyone's got their thing. So listeners often hear me say, no kink is wrong between two consenting adults, usually making a joke. But here we're taking that a little bit more seriously. And Wendy and I set out to learn more about the worlds of polyamory, kink, and BDSM in a recent Skype chat with licensed marriage and family therapist David Singer, also known around here as the LA Kink Shrink. So open your hearts and your minds, and let's jump into this cuddle puddle of information. Alright. Hi, Candace.
Hi, honey. How are you?
Good. Welcome. All right. So we've had some technical difficulties this morning, but we all seem to be up and running now. And
We're all together.
So I'm just going to kind of read the intro and then we'll just roll into it. Everybody cool with that? Everybody?
Yeah.
Let's just get it going. All right. So welcome back, podcast listeners. Thanks for tuning into the Relationship Show with Dr. Wendy and Miss Jenny. We're two LA-based psychotherapists hoping to help you improve the quality of your relationships to just about everything and everyone. I'm Jenny J.V. Wilson, a.k.a. Miss Jenny, as always, with my co-host, Dr. Wendy O'Connor.
Hey.
We've also got our friend Candace McKenzie joining us, sitting in. Want to say hi, Candace? And we are very excited because we are talking today to LA Kink Shrink David Singer, licensed marriage and family therapist, about what we might be able to learn, what relationship lessons we might learn from the world of BDSM and alternative life and love styles. David specialized in poly and kink-aware psychotherapy for over a decade. So you've been doing this work for a while, David.
I've been doing it for a while, yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning. And
thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on it.
Hanging in with all of our technical issues. They will never know. So how did you get started doing the work you're doing, David?
A lot of coincidence. Partly, it was my own life. I didn't know that consensual non-monogamy, ethical non-monogamy existed, but I kind of believe people are wired. I have no scientific background backup for this, but I think people are wired poly or mono almost as much as they're wired gay or straight. It's like the same. It's not a binary. And so anyway, I was in a relationship and discovered consensual non-monogamy and realized like it was really like an aha moment. And so trying to make that work in our relationship, trying to understand what it was. And also just in terms of my training, I was at this wonderful clinic in Silver Lake back when Silver Lake was really sketchy and not nice like it is now. No,
not really hipster.
It was not hipster at all. And I had a lot of clients that were sex workers or people on the sexual frontiers. And I kind of worked well with them and they referred and it just continued.
Did you set out to work with that population?
Initially, no. It was just at the Hollywood Sunset Free Clinic. And you kind of took, you know, free clinic. You took whoever came on in. But that was, a lot of people came in, and for some reason, those are people I really gelled well with. But then once I did my own kind of exploration into ethical non-monogamy and you know, power exchange relationships, that became something I really, because there just aren't many therapists that get it. And so it really became kind of a thing I wanted to educate myself about. And then I kind of wanted to work with people that were looking for people to work with, like I was when I was trying to learn about it all.
I'm so fascinated by this, David, because I work as a licensed marriage and family therapist too. And I say that very humbly that I'm an ally. And so I never like to say I'm all affirmative. I try to do my very best as the language continues to change. But I do, I really do enjoy working with the LGBTQ community and especially with couples. And it's a big issue that comes up a lot as far as the third, fourth partner, right? And yep. I think you said something too, which is something great for me to learn. I heard ethical monogamy and what that means and what that looks like. And
non-monogamy. Non-monogamy.
Yes, ethical non-monogamy. And also boundaries. And, yep. and you know, the couples that are sort of exploring that and sort yep. of how to do that. And so I guess the push-pull I have as a therapist is honoring what they want, but then also helping them set boundaries, because what I find sometimes, even with boundaries, there's trust issues. There's mm-hmm. just sometimes they're not, I hate to say that, I just don't feel like they're ready for it because they don't have enough grounding skills. The communication skills are off. There's a lot of trust things that are already going down the relationship that I feel like they need to concentrate on first before they do that. It's not as a judgment. It's just much yeah. more fear of we're getting into, I'm concerned that we just don't have those grounding skills to begin.
I want you to answer what Candace just said, but or speak to that. But I also thought maybe you could offer us a definition of ethical non-monogamy.
Sure. Well, I mean, ethical non-monogamy is like as opposed to cheating, right? Non-ethical yeah. non-monogamy. And the idea being, I mean, it's called consensual non-monogamy more prevalently. I prefer ethical just because I think it's kind of a higher standard, but it's the idea of, you know, it's not cheating. It's something that's been communicated. It's an agreement that's within the relationship. And because of that, I think it can often help relationships grow, because in some ways it creates an increased trust, right? Because it's one thing to know your partner is coming home to you every night because she or he has no choice, right? It's the rule. And it's another thing to know that they do have a choice and they're choosing that. And that's kind of pretty cool. And I think it can increase trust. But I really, really want to agree with something Candace was saying, which is like I've seen people try to use opening up their relationship to fix the problems, and that's not going to work. That's just going to make everything spiral more. You do need the trust. You do need the communication. You need, it's like trying to build a really, really cool, you know, upper floor on your house before you've laid down the foundation. And that you know, I'm not an architect, but I don't think that works really well.
And then I have seen couples too where, you know, bringing that third partner, not even a partner, but just having an experience is a great way of looking at it. And it works for them. It makes them happy. They have fun. That to me, that's different. So I certainly want to say that I don't disagree with it or judge it. I think it's awesome and wonderful. But sometimes I just feel like it's being used, like you even said, to fix something or to run away from really working on and facing the issues at hand.
I think it's like anything. I mean, it is sometimes used that way. But I think there's a lot of couples that, like I said, I do think people are almost wired mm-hmm. monogamous or non-monogamous, and a lot of times like they haven't had the freedom to kind of explore into that. So mm-hmm. I think that exists like that. A great deal.
I want to clarify because you've also worked with people in the BDSM and kink community. You are the LA Kink Shrink.
LAKinkShrink.com.
There you go. that being of the BDSM kink world doesn't necessarily mean that you're in a non-monogamous relationship, right? Can't you be in a monogamous relationship in that world?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I mean, you know, it's like a Venn diagram, right? There's overlap, but yeah, you can absolutely be a lot of people that are in BDSM or kink relationships or monogamous. They may have a power structure, or just maybe they're a completely conventional couple. They just like to go someplace and, you know, do flogging or tie people up or something. So yeah, absolutely.
So David, for the vanilla folk who don't really know what kink is, can you just break down a couple of the terms that you all have been using, BDSM, flogging, like whatever. Can you just give us a little bit about what is kink?
Okay. Kind of what is kink is kind of like what is air.
Yeah,
kind of,
that's but, okay.
but like, so with BDSM, it's a blend of bondage, discipline, domination, submission, sadism, masochism, right? So it can be any and all of those things. And it's just basically people that to some degree or another add something unconventional into their relationship. And a lot of people do. I think somewhere I was reading something like 20% of men and 14% of women at some point have had some sort of BDSM experience. It could be something as light as like spanking or just a role play. It could be, I think people think of BDSM as like this, you know, whips and chains. It's,
right.
it's the scene from Pulp Fiction. It's, you know, and
it's the GIMP.
It's the GIMP, exactly. It doesn't really have to be quite that much. It can be any range of stuff.
So what's the difference between a kink or kinks and a fetish?
I don't know. I guess I don't really know on that. I mean, I think that the definitions are kind of meaningless. It's kind of like it's something that adds to your relationship, be it a play thing or be it like, so I guess like a fetish, you would be more like an object, I suppose. Like you really get into, some people really get into leather or they really get
into. I'm really into plaid.
There you go.
That's my fetish, right? But the kink is kind of what you do with it, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm definitely the naughty professor. That's my thing.
Probably it's just how the person wants to narrate that too, right? Like some people may say this is my kink or this is my fetish or
like a foot fetish.
Yeah. Or
well, and so that I was thinking about that, Wendy, when you're saying the foot fetish, like. In some relationships, having somebody suck your toes might be cheating, and in another relationship, it might not be cheating.
Even not. Someone's going to get fucking spanked if he even thinks of looking at a toe.
Well, I thought Candace was coming over to me later to give me a pedicure.
Tom about the ethical non-monogamy of that one. So
David, I always say it's kind of a, you know, it just comes up at odd times, of course, but I always say, you know, no kink is wrong between two consenting adults. But what do I have wrong about that?
Well, I think no kink is wrong among two consenting adults as long as it doesn't do harm, right? So it's kind of like the old DSM, you know, if it doesn't cause marked distress to self or others. So that's kind of it. If it's consenting adults, it's not causing harm. It's not causing harm to someone else. It's not causing harm to yourself. It's probably okay. It really is. And I think what happens sometimes is people get very, very uptight about it. They get very, very closeted about it. And it kind of cuts down their ability to communicate. And I think if people actually had open communication with just people on the street about, hey, what do you do that's kinky? You're going to be really surprised at what just that person in line next to you at Starbucks does, because it's there.
Nobody is going to ever order coffee the same way again after this.
Yes.
That has a whole new meaning.
So would something, and again, I'm new to all of this, and it's so interesting. I'm so happy that we're having you on the show because, you know, I think there could be a lot of shame or embarrassment or guilt about even being curious about even, you know, your website name, Kink Shrink. I mean, I think, yeah. So my question is, let me just stay on track. Is something like the furries or like the furry community, is that kink or is that fetish or is that just playful? What is that?
Yes. I mean, you know, my girlfriend says, ¿por qué no los dos? ¿Por qué no los tres on that one? I mean, sometimes I think definitions get in the way of understanding. It's something that people like and it gives them joy. I mean, I know some furries that it's a sexual thing. I know a lot of furries it's not. It's kind of like puppy play is really big in some aspects of the BDSM community. And they really get into being puppies. And
Wait a minute. Okay, slow down. So you say puppy play. First of all, I'm sorry if I ever sound like a 12-year-old in any of this, because I have mad respect for this world. I have played in it in the past. I get it. But when you say puppy play, I imagine, okay, so this is what happens to me. I get a vision of like nakedness just in a pile of puppies, right? Yeah. Like, and I thought that would be excellent, but would that be bad for the puppies? But then it sounds to me like you're saying puppy play is people playing puppies.
Yeah, it's like people. So there used to be a group of people that had, they would call puppy puddles, I think. And basically, it was just they'd all just kind of just cuddled together. It was a cuddle puddle, but also like.
I think that's fuck yeah! Yeah. I want a cuddle puddle.
So puppy play is not my thing, but the people that do it talk about how it's so like puppies, right? You watch them. They are so free. They're joyful. They're free. They don't give a damn what anyone thinks about them. They're just having fun. And people have a hard time getting to that level of freedom and that level of joy. And they called it puppy love. And that, I'm not quite sure how we got onto puppy play. I'm sure I got us there. But that's kind of what that does.
Through furries. We were exploring furries and we got to puppy play.
I like what you said, David, because that kind of brings me the question I was going to ask. I like what you said about like the puppy play and the sense of freedom. So I work with eating disorders and body image. And I think that, you know, body positivity has come a long way, right? I feel I'm also a huge supporter at Health at Every Size. And so I'm curious to know, especially since you specialize in this, when I think of kink, when I think of fantasy, when I think of the freedom to make a choice and, you know, forgive, I shouldn't even say forgive, but even as a woman, right? From my era growing up, the sense of the freedom that I feel good about my body. And if I feel good about my body, then I feel good to express myself. Uh-huh. So I guess where I'm going on this is I feel like our culture is becoming more body positive. I feel like we're making strides in the right direction. So my hope is that we have more of that freedom to sort of own your kink and own whatever it is, as long as you're good to yourself and somebody else. You know, if you want to jump on Pornhub, if you want to just go out and do stuff, whatever it is that you know, that we're honoring that as human beings, because I do think there's such a stigma around kink and,
puppy puddles.
And like
first of all, I think that would be an amazing fundraising event for Joe Biden to do a cuddle puddle. is that wrong? I'm sorry. So I think to build on what she's saying, David, if you could tell us maybe what people get wrong about the kink and PD when we're talking about the stigma, what is it that, I mean, I know we're kind of already touching on some things, but what do you think are the most egregious errors that people make when they think of BDSM and kink?
And ethical non-monogamy. I think the main mistake people make is they think it's so rare. To go back to ethical non-monogamy, research puts it basically 4-5% of Americans are in and a consensually non-monogamous relationship. That's pretty much exactly the same number of people that are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. And there's a lot of resources for the LGBTQ community, and that's great. But people that are doing or exploring consensual non-monogamy almost always feel like they're the Lone Ranger. They're the only ones that are doing it. And so that's, I think, a thing that people get really, really wrong is that it's you're a weirdo if you're doing that. Another, I mean, just from stats that have no meaning but get stuck in my head, something like 20% of people in America have at some point had a consensual non-monogamous relationship. And that's roughly the same number of people in America that have cats.
Oh.
I've had both.
But and there is some stigmatization against people that have cats. As a cat guardian, I know that.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's more stigmatization against people in consensual non-monogamy, even though there's a lot of people doing it. And same thing with kink. I mean, honestly, the people that have at least at some point played with kink in their sex life is huge. And again, it's made such a stigma. It's made into the GIMP. It's made into this stuff that it's not. And it's just not.
So what might happen if a vanilla, straight arrow, straight edge kind of therapist is working with somebody from this community?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I have a selective basis because I have people that have sought me out, right, as a kink shrink. But I have heard some truly horror stories. The worst horror story I've heard, and this was a therapist that always had some issues of her own, but it was at the end of a fairly long-term therapy. It was the closing session. It was at the end of the closing session, and the therapist at the end said, "Oh, and by the way, that kink stuff you do, that's sick."
Oh my God.
So
the kink stuff that you do is sick. The kink.
So,
did you say cake stuff?
No,
cake.
The kink.
Kink. Oh, it's the cake stuff. It's still, that's so inappropriate.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's really so horrible.
Awful. Yeah. I heard you guys talking about your last podcast, how, you know, people come into couples therapy both to fix their relationship and also sometimes to break up. But yeah, people that come into couples relationship are going through a problem. You know, that's just it. And a lot of times with vanilla therapists, they will point to the ethically non-monogamous basis of the relationship as a cause of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they don't say, you know, the problem may be that you're being monogamous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it becomes pathologized sometimes when it's not the issue. It's, mm-hmm, I mean, there's other issues. And that's not it.
Yeah. I think I can certainly be guilty of that too as well, because usually that's a little bit of a, I don't want to say warning flag, but sometimes if they're coming with all, you know, communication problems and it's, uh-huh, just so much stuff, you know, you can just, uh-huh, tell, like, there's just so much stuff they're coming in with. And then I'm hearing that and there's trust issues. So I have, you know, I'm glad that you're saying that. That's my learning curve, to just, you know, and before making assumptions, to be curious, to ask a lot of questions, maybe before going to that, you know, really sort of readdressing, you know, what's your bottom line?
So boundaries,
yes, boundaries, rules, expectations, instead
to tease out what the problems are. Because, yeah, I mean, so without a doubt, there's challenges in trying to open up a relationship. Or, I mean, there is going to be jealousy issues. There are going to be jealousy issues. There are going to be communication issues. That doesn't mean the structure's wrong. It means there's stuff to tease out. There's stuff to learn.
Yeah.
There's stuff to figure out. And I mean, no disrespect to vanilla therapists, but I think, and a lot of vanilla therapists can get it and can learn and can do a fine job, but I think a lot don't. And they'll pathologize it. Or a lot of times too, people don't ask about a relationship style, but like in an intake form or something like that. So you'll have people that are actually in a non-monogamous relationship, but it's never brought up. It's kind of like, you know, if you don't ask a client if they're drinking, it's kind of, you know, if not, well, that's the problem.
No, but it's, yeah.
But it's, you know, if you don't give permission to talk about it, a lot of times it's just going to get missed. And it's an important part of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had clients that came in, and I'm always grateful for what I do because I want to learn. But I also know
that if there's someone, a better match, could understand them, you know? So one thing to keep in mind as a therapist is, you know, that if it really feels uncomfortable or you feel a lot of transference or whatever, please refer out. That is what we do. We have to know what we're okay with and what we don't understand. Go get some more training, come back.
Yeah, and as clients, the clients should feel okay. It's okay if you're a client and you don't have to sit and endure a therapist who doesn't get you or who you feel like you're not connecting with. So from the other side too, you know, I think a lot of times people will stay in therapy too because they're, we're talking about the stigma too, right? So that they might, and that might be what they need to talk about and get over, but they're unable to because, you know, they're to get over there. Yeah. Because
what is my therapist going to think about me if they know this, you know? So I'll keep this to myself. But
I'm calling you.
Yes.
We're going to be calling
Thank you.
So David, I just need to consult with you and just make sure that I'm, you know, I'm where I need to be and, you know, supporting.
I've done that. I've had other therapists call and just kind of ask a couple of questions and stuff like that. And that's, I mean, I have a huge ego, so that's good.
So I want to kind of pose a hypothetical. So let's say that I'm in a relationship with Candace and we've been monogamous. But I'm kind of interested in Wendy and I want to open it up. How do I do that? Like, how would I approach it? If like Candace and I have never really had that talk, what's a good sort of approach to this? What are the pitfalls that we should be aware of before I go and talk to my red-haired beauty?
Just to take it slow and to be communicate. And then after you communicate, to communicate and then maybe do some communicating.
About community. But like, you know, like, do I tell her when we're, Candace and I are kind of having a night and we're setting the mood? Do I say, you know, baby, what would be really awesome is, you know, how we just had dinner with that hot shrink? Should we bring her in?
So I had a client in the past that I think one of the hardest transitions is when you're already in a closed relationship and you're trying to open it up, particularly if this is more the idea of one than the other. And a thing I learned from them, what they found that worked really well for them, because they were having a lot of conflict about the issue of opening up. And it could easily start becoming kind of a fight. What they started doing is when they had the conversation, they held each other. They either lay in bed and held each other, and it's not what you were saying, like, you know, hey, we're about to do it. Oh, by the way, because they had a really strong relationship and they would lose sight of that sometimes in this process. And by having that tactile contact and that level of communication, it really helped de-weaponize the other communication, and they could actually hear each other. And it worked really well for them.
That's like an attachment thing, right, Wendy?
Yeah, so anchoring and you know, I say there's anchors and then there's buoys. Mm-hmm. And you know, we all sometimes feel like buoys. We're bopping in the water, we're a little anchored, but then the anchor is like solid. And when my couples get really helpless or hopeless, I ask them to hold hands and just breathe and just connect again. Mm-hmm. Just understand anything we can say will be okay and we'll get through it. Mm-hmm. You know, I had an interesting couple that a while back that came to me, and they were both very depressed, and they were in their 20s, late 20s, and they had a rule. They were married, and they had a rule that an agreement, I guess you say, that they were allowed to have an open relationship with their same gender. That was the rule. So she could be with women and he could be with men, even though they really loved each other and just wanted to be with each other. The only thing is that they had to share when it was going to happen. But, and I don't know if this is more acceptable, but she went on and she was able to have a couple flings with women and didn't really, was like, okay, but whatever. And then he secretly was with a man for the first time. He had a very serious religious background, and there was a lot of shame and guilt. Yeah. He had a lot of PTSD. He had done a couple tours in the Army, so just had a lot of different things. And he just he was taught that a man just holds everything in. Mm-hmm. So he had this big experience, and contacted an STD, and then came back to the wife, and then she caught something, and that's how she found out.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we kind of said that it's, you know, that he didn't have the words to open up, that they did have that agreement. And I think she just didn't think he would ever even think about really being with the same gender person. So they were amazing and worked through, thought outside the box, constantly explored, you know, what all of that was about. And it was just, you know, it's also the fantasy, right? That our couples fantasize about a lot of things. And once they go check something out, you know, they come back, and it made them appreciate their marriage even more. So it's very interesting how different kinds of things like that can happen. Mm-hmm.
So what leads people into the BDSM playground? Kind of what Wendy was just saying too, like about the fantasy, you know, like following the fantasy into it, and then the reality is much different. Like, I imagine for some people it is kind of the naughtiness, the stigma might have created some of the hotness of it, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on how people get involved in that world.
In the BDSM world, I do think it's a lot of times it's, you know, they've possibly seen some really hot porn and they kind of want to, you know, it's like, oh, that was really interesting. Or they've read, you know, all these books, you know, the marketplace books or the beauty series books. And they're like, huh.
You will give me the titles of those so I can include them in the links at the end of the show notes. Okay.
All right. Be included.
All of a sudden, I'm a reader.
Know what you're getting for Christmas, Wendy.
Are they audiobooks?
I do think there's some people that that. There is some truth that some people are trauma survivors and go into BDSM and kink to kind of make meaning out of their trauma and to gain a sense of control out of the past trauma where they had no control. But I think that's the minority. I think that that's the cliche about what it is. And there are some people that are like that. But I think it's mostly people that read some books. You know, I don't remember quite how old I was, but finding the story of O and reading that.
I love the story of O. It's great.
Yeah.
What's the story of O, guys?
Nothing.
You will get it for Christmas. And I will include a link in the show notes. It's an erotic novel.
Okay.
People kind of explore it from that and just
okay.
Go from there.
Okay. My stocking.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you will.
For early birthday presents.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That comes before Christmas. How will somebody, or how might somebody know if their kink or fetish is becoming, or their involvement in BDSM is becoming a little unhealthy, or you know, a compulsion as opposed to a hobby?
I'm gonna go back to the old DSM again too. I think that if it's causing marked distress to self or others, so sometimes kink will cause marked distress to a person, but it's more about the shame. And you know, you were talking about the shame for the guy that had that same sex relationship. In that case, it's not that the same sex relationship was the wrong thing. It's not that the kink was the problem. It's again teasing it out and finding out what's beneath it. But I think if your kink is harming your relationship, then it's something to kind of look at what's going on here. Is it could be that the relationship isn't the right relationship, but it also could be that am I too attached to only being in my furry suit, if we're going to go back to furries, which is a mistake for us to do.
Is it wrong to get a flea collar?
I think when it becomes the overarching thing and you stop seeing your partner as your partner. Your partner is just this object.
I have to just say, so what's coming up recently in the dating community, that a lot of people are now saying on their profile, or maybe it's been for a while, but I just started seeing it in more of a theme or a pattern, is non-monogamous with a primary. Is that something, I mean, that was new to me. I said, what is a primary? So they said that's the main person, but that they're able to date and not take everybody else so seriously. So I guess it's the same thing, right? It's just
It kind of is. I mean, the thing with that, I mean, everyone's come up with this phrase polyamory, and I love that it's kind of weirdly trendy, and but
people
at least
talk about
it's being talked about now, which I love. But there's so many different types of ethical, consensual non-monogamy. And that is a problem sometimes, where you need to kind of make sure you and your partner are on the same page of what your ethical non-monogamous relationship is going to look like. But yeah, I think so for a lot of people, and that is actually the structure that I have, where I have a primary partner, and we're both free to date others. I don't think we have for a very long time, but we're free to.
And you have a rule where you share, or you have a rule and you don't share.
I think once you create, if there isn't sharing, I don't think that structure is going to work, because that takes away from the trust. And the trust in any relationship, you know, trust and communication are the pillars. And so I think that you have to share. You have to, you know, you have to not just share facts. You have to be open. You have to be transparent.
Well, the third pillar,
incredibly important.
The third pillar there is honesty, right? So because you can't have trust and good communication without honesty. And I'm wondering how you advise, or any of you advise people to improve their communication and honesty. I don't know, in some ways maybe it would be easier in this world, because do you share that on the first date? I mean, when do you?
I think yes. I mean, there actually is a debate within the ethically non-monogamous community about this, but yeah, I think so, because I think that if, you know, someone, you know, goes out on a first date with me and thinks I'm just, you know, just this wonderful person, because, you know, who wouldn't, but, you know, and they make up this whole thing of we're going to, you know, get married and da-da-da-da-da, and they don't know the structure of me, that's kind of deceptive. So I think I think you can't possibly be too honest. I do kind of think that. I mean, I guess that's not true. You don't want to just go up to some random stranger on the street and say, hey, by the way, I sleep with other people. But if you're having a date or something like that, I think it's important. And you were talking about how do you discuss it and how do you be honest? I think in some ways, this is, I kind of think, an advantage that non-monogamous and kink-based relationships have, in that the people in them have to write their own script, right? You can kind of go down the ruts in the road in a monogamous relationship. We've seen the Disney movies. We, you know, there's all the we know how to do monogamy. We've been trained in this forever. We usually screw it up. 50% of people end up divorcing. Huge percentage of people end up cheating. But we know the concept. But if you're doing a non-monogamous relationship or a kink-based relationship, you have to communicate, because you have to figure out your structure, because there isn't a default. There is no default to go to. And like I said, just the talk. You're talking about how to do it. It's, you know, it goes back to Gottman, you know, to, you know, not have contempt, to, you know, to be able to listen and to love. Even if you're hurt, even if you're angry, to still love and listen and empathize.
Doesn't this type of structure, though, if someone, well, let me say two things. And one thing is, it's refreshing to hear that now on like Tinder or Bumble or whatever, that there are checks that you can now check off for these specific types of relationships. So that's nice that they're starting to put them even like out the gate before you even swipe on someone, you know what they're about or their desires. So I think that's interesting. And the other thing is, so with ethical non-monogamous relationships, doesn't that take away the secret? It can be a little confusing because it kind of then takes the sneakiness, the taboo, the secrets away from just plain old infidelity.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I guess there's like a thrill, the cheating, I guess, but it adds some stuff too. It adds this, it's a whole different type of trust. Like I was saying before, that, you know, your partner can be with other people and still wants to be with you, you know, and it, in my opinion, it adds more than it subtracts. I mean, you know, if people get into cheating, that's going to be their thing, but I'm not, as a therapist, going to advocate that. I think that's going to cause you more problems and positives.
It, that reminds me of, it's one of my favorite articles, and or essays, I don't remember the full title, but it's something like on monogamy by, I believe it's Camille LaPaglia, who talks about, for her, the attraction to non-monogamy or the choice of that was, she loved seeing her partner with somebody else because it confirmed her own good taste.
Yeah.
You know, that it was, it instilled her with a sense of pride. Like, you know, they may be with you right now, but they're going home with me kind of thing. Or, but they come home to me. This is the person. Of course, isn't she amazing? At the same time, I could see that that is a little objectifying to your partner.
Yes, but
and I wish I were as evolved sometimes if somebody's like flirting with my husband to, you know, be like, yeah, isn't he fucking fabulous? But, you know, sometimes it's like, but that's about me, not about him.
So as much as I'm an advocate of ethical non-monogamy, I'm also an advocate of monogamy if that's what's right for the person. Because there are, like I said, I do think that people can be wired. It's a continuum, but wired one end of the spectrum or the other. And, you know, back to the first question, what got me into all of this, my partner was very much wired monogamous. I mean, without a doubt. And eventually we realized that this wasn't going to work. We both had this, it wasn't going to work. We couldn't find a compromise. So, you know,
because
people
one monogamous, person,
you know, Muslim,
person, because one person wants it and the other person doesn't want it.
Yeah, I think one person can accept it and the other person can't. One, like, if you're monogamous, I think that your partner being non-monogamous feels like, you know, a cut in the chest, and that it's not just like working through your jealousies. It's not just understanding your issues. It's not a sense of one being more evolved than the other. I think that ethical non-monogamy really works for some people. And I think monogamy really works for some people. And they're both fine. And it's kind of just figuring out which is you and choosing your partners accordingly.
And have you had couples where really they just can't come to an agreement, so then they break up?
Yeah. I mean, I've had couples that have come into me for this issue. And I mean, for one thing, they're giving it a shot because they could just go to a standard couples counselor who's going to be like, well, no, of course this is wrong. So they're giving it a shot to come to me. And I appreciate that. They're obviously giving ethical non-monogamy a chance. But I think that for some people, it's just not. And it's just learning to accept that, to not blame the other, and to come to as amicable a parting as possible.
And I would imagine that's the same with kink or anything, that someone might be into some hardcore kink, whatever that would be, and then the other person might just, you know, I mean, I think it's a stage of life. I think it's cultural components. Mm-hmm. I think it's the stigma. I think it's what I call the audience. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of shame and embarrassment, and also just the secret life of someone that really, you know, what your whole core of this discussion is about, honesty and trust and intimacy.
I do think that's part of the work, if you're figuring out if, so is this that, no, you are non-monogamous, you are monogamous, this isn't going to work. Is it that? Or is it the shame, the insecurities? It's because those things can be worked through. But the others, I don't think as well.
I think, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I think that there's also a piece of it that is everybody has their own interests. And I think a lot of times we look to our partner to play every role in our life. And, you know, relationships are generally about compromise. And I think a lot of times when it comes to sexual intimacy, especially if you're wired more monogamous, it's really difficult to think about compromising on those things. You know, it's one thing that I'm into musical theater and my husband isn't, so I can go and, you know, enjoy musical theater with other people.
Well, that's an issue where there is a right and wrong, and you were right, he's wrong. But go on.
He has gotten so much better. I mean, he is.
Anyone that's against musical theater is wrong. I'm sorry.
He's not against it per se, but he's it's not his thing.
A Fosse Verdon FX.
He's excited about that, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've done good work with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what would you suggest to people who are considering, I just got choked up, considering kind of flirting with some kink stuff? Like, what are some steps? What would you suggest to a vanilla kind of a person who might be curious about opening themselves up? What are some steps?
Communicate. There's a thing called the yes, no, maybe chart, which you can find pretty much if you just do a little Google search. It's a good way to kind of, with you and your partner or partners, to kind of go through your interests.
Everybody's writing this down right now. Yes, no, maybe chart.
You know, yes, things like, I'm into that.
Okay. Maybe,
like, okay, you know, that doesn't really float my boat, but I'll do that for you. And no, that's
absolutely not.
Wendy and I are going to be doing that after we get off.
Are your yes, no, maybe list going to be part of the show notes?
Oh, yeah. Our personal ones, yes. Right. So, yeah, yes, nipple clamps, no handcuffs. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And also, like, a couple of things to explore. There's places you can go to watch. I mean, if it's you
I
know,
like to
a
watch
sex thing, there's like swing clubs you can just go. You don't have to swing. In fact, I usually urge people on a first visit, just assume you're not, go watch, figure out what you think about it, how does it feel for you,
and they're okay with you watching the voyeurism. But,
oh yeah, yeah. In a club like that, absolutely, they're very okay with it. Yeah. Or there's dungeons and go to that.
Pornhub has Just for Women, which is kind of cool too. And so that's a nice, because I think, and again, I'm not trying to say, you know, just to genderize it, but I think that for some women, it's a little, there's a fear, right? Sort of exploring and like, what does that mean? What does it look like?
So in most swing clubs too, though, like most clubs, or I don't know if it's as much in the dungeon world, but I know like in swinger clubs, sex clubs, that women cannot, that men have to be accompanied by a woman.
Yes. So my friends go to Swinging Richards in Atlanta, Georgia, one of my favorite places to go to with my friends. I have to be accompanied by them. Because what? It's a male strip club. It's a gay male strip club, and I have to be accompanied by a man to be able even to walk in there.
Why?
That's just the rules, I guess. And I can't have a private dance. It's only for the guys. But I mean, I like it. I feel safe there. It's I I like the energy of the freedom to express oneself. And I prefer going there instead of going to a straight male strip club. Or I shouldn't say straight, not make assumption, but like they're just, it's different. It's just a different style. It's just, I don't feel like I'm getting attacked. They're not, I don't feel like they're really interested in me, if that makes sense. They're just, I feel like they're more interested in my friends, which is great. But I can admire their beautiful bodies and
feel safe to you. Like
I feel safe, and they can dance. They can really like, they can really
and they
dance.
Smell so good. And everything is so well manscaped.
And like just this whole thing, and you're like, oh my
that's
god,
that's your thing. But if you want, there's a whole bear review.
But you know what? I am treated like. Just, I'm treated like a princess, and everyone is very gracious and loving and wonderful, and it's fun, and I think that's the whole thing too about the kink, and it's fun. I think people forget about like it doesn't have to be, you know,
going
it can be dark and
puppy
sexy, and that's your thing, but it can also be kind of fun too. So
can I go back to Jenny trying to slip in a little dungeon talk? What the hell is that? What is a dungeon? What's
a dungeon?
Okay, so there are dungeons, and I remember the first time I went to a dungeon, I had this vision in my head. It was like this, you know, medieval torture and
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, very Game of Thrones. Long before Game of Thrones,
right?
I'm old, but at this particular place, they have a great big fire pit. And there was a bunch of people there roasting marshmallows over the fire pit. And I'm like, not what I expected. But so there are dungeons. There are dungeons that are specifically cater to new people and have a lot of dungeon monitors, basically security, and are very welcoming to new people and make them, you know, you, Candace, you were talking about not feeling... everyone's coming at you feeling attacked, to set up that thing so you can have a safe space to observe and you don't,
yes.
you know,
so it's
have
intro. Yes. Into the community.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
That's more my style. My style is like, I'm very open, but I just don't, does that make sense? I just need a little space. I just need a little space. You know what I'm saying? Let me just sort of like observe. And then I just get more comfortable and feel that I'm more,
I agree with that. Like I said, with when I have clients that have gone to a swing club or when I've had a partner that I've gone to a swing club with, I've talked about like, we're just going to go here. We're going to observe. Yeah. We're going to chillax. Yeah. We're just going to, you know, if we just dance all night, that's cool. If we just sit around, that's cool. And there's no pressure, you know, there's no expectations. Expectations, I think, are the...
Yes.
They just ruin everything.
I went with my friends to, I don't know what to call it. It's kind of, there was a sex shop, and then in behind the sex shop is a whole, like a voyeur, like it's voyeur.
Mm-hmm. Like a peep show?
A peep show, but it's huge. It's like this huge, it felt like a dungeon because there's room after room after room. There's like one room is like a dance room. And the next room is kind of like, you know, there's a peep show or peephole, if you will. And then there's one room that's a bondage room. Another room is like this type of room and showers and this.
You
and
go
that.
To some cool places.
And it was really cool. And it was, I have to be honest with you, like, I'm so glad I went because, of course, I was nervous, but I was with my friends. And again, everybody was so lovely. Like, they knew that I was just there to be open and to support, but I was curious. And we had a great time. But I mean, it wasn't as scary as. I don't know, people, it wasn't scary at all. Everyone was just wonderful and lovely, and it was fun and kind of sexy.
It's
and
new.
Like, thrilling. New, thrilling. And so, and when I say thrilling too, I'm very, very, I did not go to make fun or I'm doing it to explore, to grow as a person. I'm doing it to explore, to grow as a clinician, to support my friends. Mm-hmm. So I did not go to make fun of or to observe as, does that make sense? Like I'm. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm just going to see what that world looks like. I'm actually going as trying to build myself as an ally.
It's a conference or a field trip.
Yeah.
So kind of what you're describing has been what I've seen in Los Angeles and New York. I've been to various places and places that you think are that people might call dungeons are sort of like what you're describing there, Candace, where there's, yeah, you might have a room that looks like the medieval Game of Thrones kind of, you know, or medieval torture chamber, but then there'd be like a hospital room, if that is, you know, your role play and your kink, because maybe you want to be, you know, in stirrups. There was a room, I will never forget one room that had a giant like boxing ring in the middle of it, and you could walk around and watch people inside the boxing ring doing whatever they were doing. You know, there's like theme rooms, there's you know, it catering to a variety of things. So and yes, the showers and locker rooms, right? And and then there was just a room with a dance floor and food, and you could just hang out there and just talk to these people, and you know, everybody was really cool and open. And I've never been to a place that was all just, you know, bondage. You know, and I think that that's what people think, kind of like we're talking about, like the GIMP, some sort of really almost violent fantasies. And sometimes a kink or sex play or BDSM can also look like the tickling and, you know, light spanking or with a rolled up magazine like our president enjoys.
It's you know, a lot of it is sensation play. But the main thing is it is, at least the places I've been to, so I've sort of self-select, I imagine, they're welcoming. It's not the, I think people build it up into being this much scarier place. And then it sometimes can almost be a letdown. It's like, oh, it's
that's it.
People. Yeah. It's just folks.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for listeners to improve their overall sexual or relationship health?
The yes, no, maybe list, I really do think is something that can really, it's a great conversation opener. If you're having a conversation about, you know, honey, I'd like to kind of explore some things. And it doesn't have to be this, like, by that I mean other relationships or something like that. Just stuff you want to explore and talk. Just, you know, you can't over communicate, and you can make it sexy, really. You can have just share your fantasies and consider it all kind of an experiment. You know, I always misquote this, but Edison supposedly, I think the quote's fake, but there's a fake quote attributed to Edison that he never failed. He just came up with 1,100 ways not to invent a light bulb. It's kind of the same way. You're going to try something and you may go, all right, that wasn't what we thought. And that's cool. That's, you have fun with it. Just be gentle and experiment.
Dr. Wendy's Dream Journal.
There. Do that one more time. Wendy, any dream journal exercises?
Yeah, I think that in your dream journal, it would be nice to, you know, talk about your fantasies, talk about what is taboo, talk about maybe one part of what you saw growing up with maybe your, you know, attachment figures, your parents, your siblings, in regards to sexual history and relationships, you know, even religious or cultural aspects. And then, you know, part two is really think outside the box and think about, you know, challenging yourself and fantasizing and even maybe a little section about judgment. It's okay to get it out of your head and onto paper. Mm-hmm. Everybody has judgments, or they are a little appalled or overwhelmed or shocked, and that's okay. And that's a place to put it too. I want it out of your heads and into developing this nice list. And my hope is that when people find loving relationships, that they're able to, or even dating, you know, that they're able to share that list in a safe place, and maybe they can go to the next level exploring their sexual health and relationships.
I think that'll make everybody a lot happier. And if we can just learn some ways to just fight through our shame and realize, you know what, we're all kinky in our own ways, you know, and that's cool. That's actually really great.
And there's going to be somebody out there who's going to dig you for your kink and not in spite of it. You know, I just think that that's really important too. I'm sorry, Candace, I cut you off.
Oh, no, not at all. I was going to say I work a lot with scrupulosity, which is sort of religious OCD. And so sexual thoughts, you know, freedom of exploring sexuality is just such a huge conversation piece too as well. So I'm a big believer in sort of what Wendy is saying too, and sort of act, if you will, as sort of like redefining, you know, your childlike values versus your adult-like values. And I still feel that you can be kinky and explore yourself, but still bring in your higher source. Absolutely. Because I think sometimes a lot of that becomes incongruent for people. And how do we sort of explore that? That as human beings, we have a right to receive pleasure and joy outside of the box, if you will, you know, of what society says.
Everybody keeps talking about getting outside the box. I think some of us need to get more inside the box.
No. Ooh, look at Jenny.
That was being dirty, you guys. But actually, what you were just saying reminded me of something else that I kind of wanted to just kind of throw out there, too, about the integration of self. That I imagine, David, you see a lot of clients, I know we all do, and you know, generally, but in this community, that feel very splintered because of the stigma and because of the secrecy, or even if they have an ethical non-monogamous relationship, still feeling like it's not something you talk about at cocktail parties, you know. So I'm wondering if you might have any thoughts on that.
Part of the reality is, you know, I was saying initially that, you know, the percentage of people in consensually not, this could be a soapbox for just a minute, that the percentage of people in consensually non-monogamous relationships is the same as people in LGBTQ relationships. But that's a protected class. And ethical non-monogamy is not. And people can face discrimination in the workplace. They do have issues of they have more than one partner, but you can't bring more than one partner to the company Christmas party. They do have issues where there's a morality clause in their contract. And then even though they're being completely moral in their definition of their morals, they could face retaliation for violating that. So it's an issue. You know, it took until the 70s for psychology to finally not make homosexuality a mental illness. It's going to take a while to destigmatize consensual non-monogamy, but it's no disrespect to the people that fought those fights in the 70s for this, but this is important too. And you're right, people, they feel stigmatized, they feel splintered, they feel there's no one to talk to. Although I will say with my clients that once they start talking about it a little bit, they usually do like little baby steps, little test conversations, and they find this friend they've known for 20 years that says, oh, well, actually, we kind of do that too. And you find out that you're not as Lone Ranger as you think you are.
Yeah, and you have to be really careful if you're going into politics. there's a very strict. I know. It sounds like I'm obsessed with this, but yeah. But I think about that. You know, when you were talking about morality clauses in people's contracts and stuff like that, that there are some jobs where, if it got out, yeah, okay. You know, if you're a celebrity, you know, on a television show, you know, people might have thoughts or snicker, but you know, other things where it's going to just cut you off at the knees, you're going to be considered untrustworthy. You're going to be considered actually the opposite of what we're talking about is kind of necessary. You're going to be considered untrustworthy, dishonest, you know.
I think that's, I mean, this may just me being very optimistic, but I think that's changing. I think that Hollywood has worked storylines in with non-monogamous relationships where it's not, and then therefore one of them gets murdered or one of them is a spy or something weird like that. They're just
there.
Folks. Yeah. So I think it's changing. I think it's going to take a while, but you know, it took a long time with a lot of the other social changes. The fact that you guys have me on your podcast, I mean, it's being talked about now. And it wasn't like 10 years ago. It wasn't. It makes me really optimistic for the future.
Yay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and for your patience with all the technical difficulties we had getting this rolling.
No, it was really fun. I really enjoyed this a lot.
And thanks, Candace. Oh, yes.
Can I say one more thing?
Of course.
Because this was back, I was listening to your last podcast and it made me think of something. You were talking about, you had the dog trainer. And also something that I've learned from one of my clients is the concept of treat your partner like your pet. And this is not back to puppy play, yeah. But it's the concept of, you know, we come home and we greet our pet with, oh, who's a good boy, who's a good girl, and we love him and we pet him and we do all this, and we come home to our partner, it's like, hey, and we move on. And if we can bring some of that joy of connection that we have with our pets, yep, with our partners, I think that's going to be really cool.
Beautifully said.
Yep.
Amen.
David, thank you so much. It was great to talk with you, and I can't wait to consult. I'm sure we're going to have more
discussions. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed this.
So thanks everybody for listening. Again, David can be found online at lakinkshrink.com. You can email him at lakinkshrink@gmail.com. You can find his phone number online as well. Wendy and I, this is our information. You can find me, Jenny with an I, online. Jenny JV Wilson on Twitter, on Instagram. I'm the Preppy Rebel. My email is jenniferjvwilson@gmail.com, and my website is jennyjvwilson.com. We're both on Facebook. Candace, where can we find you?
CandaceDelMcKenzie.com, cdmcounseling@gmail.com, and I'm working now. I'm going to be coming back to work back at Wendy's office, and I'm working in Westwood too as well, so Brentwood and Westwood.
So, and you can find Wendy on her YouTube channel, and where else can they find you, Wendy?
I am Dr. Wendy on Twitter. I am Dr. Wendy on Instagram, YouTube, Gmail, drwendyoconnor@gmail.com, and my website, drwendyoconnor.com.
And just to clarify, your Twitter is actually Ask Dr. Wendy.
Well, girl, I had no idea. Thank you.
And her Instagram is I am Dr. Wendy.
That was a musical right there. That was my chorus line.
Thank you. Yeah, you tweet a lot, Jenny. I love it. You know what?
More people need to watch.
You tweet some really good internal thoughts, and you know, they should jump on your Twitter if that's appropriate.
Yeah. Well, I have a work and a private Twitter. And so I tweet a lot on my private Twitter, which is not for clients. But you know, or not for the faint of heart, you know, it's like they find me fine, but you know, it's not a big deal, but you know, I do try to keep the professional and the personal thoughts a little bit separate, I love Twitter.
Is great. So, you know, just
do you tweet, David?
Not much. I grudgingly accept that social media exists, but I really should do a bit more on it. But if people tweet me, I will respond, I promise.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time. And we will have all of our information, all of David's information and links to things that we've talked about, from the story of O to the yes, no, maybe list chart, all of that good stuff. And we will see you guys next time.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Bye,
you guys. Thanks so much. I want to correct myself. When I mentioned an essay by Camille Lapaglia, I have no idea where that name came from. I was actually referencing an article entitled On Monogamy, Loving Tricks and Tricking Lovers by Pat Califia or Califia. We want to thank Candace McKenzie for coming in and sitting with us today, and of course David Singer for sharing his wisdom with us and being really patient as we were trying to get our Skype system to work. David's contact information is in the show notes, and he can also be found on fetlife.com as, you guessed it, LA Kink Shrink, which he says is like the Facebook of the kink community. So if you're interested in exploring the BDSM or kink world or opening up your relationship, here's a few suggestions from this episode. First of all, it's really important that you go slow. Address trust and communication issues. Learn to de-weaponize language and respect boundaries. And of course, if any problems arise, know that there are therapists like David out there who want to help and who are well acquainted with the pitfalls and challenges one can encounter when facing this new frontier. And whatever you do, we encourage you to be kind, safe, and loving to yourself and your partners. This is a great place to emphasize what Wendy always says, stay open. And what I always say, be as authentically yourself as you can possibly stand. In this context, I feel like it matters more than ever. So thanks for listening and for all your great emails and questions. I'm sorry if I haven't gotten back to you yet. I will. We always appreciate it if you can recommend the pod to others, leave us a review on iTunes, or at least throw us some stars. And as always, feel free to send us questions and feedback at relationshipshowla@gmail.com. We'll see you next time on The Relationship Show.
You know what? We're all kinky in our own ways, you know? Now that's going to be stuck in my head for like a week.
Sorry, that's like my on hold music.
LAKinkShrink@gmail.com.